You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of All Good Things, the Star Trek Universe podcast here on the BQN and the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mark White, and with me today is Captain Jeremiah Brown and host of the world-famous Trek Experts Quiz, Davey Willett. Hey, guys. Welcome.
Woo!
Hey, Mark.
Woo.
It's good to be back.
This is so fun for me and totally not anticipated. I didn't know a couple weeks ago when my entire team was like, we're going on the cruise, what I was going to do. And now I've got two great co-hosts with me this week. So thank you, guys.
Yo, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here, Mark.
So welcome. I've been waiting for an All Good Things invite for a while, Mark, so here I am. I invited myself, but here I am.
Oh, this is great. I really have wanted you on, Davey. I haven't thrown out the invite, but I have wanted you here so bad. I think everybody else does too, so we'll have you back on when the rest of us are here too.
Beautiful.
But before we get into it, it's time for Hit It, Riker.
This is the bridge. All hands to emergency escape pods.
Escape pod. Sweet. So for the next few weeks, while Picard is airing, we are going to discuss Picard at the start of All Good Things. Well, some of you guys have not had a chance yet to watch this week's episode, so we are this week not going to recap the episode that dropped literally just hours ago. Instead, we are going to recap the last couple of episodes. So what do you guys think so far?
This is an epic chapter to an already great story.
I'd have to agree, yeah.
The Next Gen cast is going to go out with the bang they deserved 20-some years ago that they did not get with the missus.
Yeah, good yeah. point. I feel that just the pacing and everything about the first two episodes that I've seen, episode three, still an hour before it drops in Australia at time of recording, but the... what I've seen so far has just been not only a beautiful love letter to TNG, but a beautiful love letter to the franchise as well, because there's just so many wonderful little Easter eggs peppered throughout it. And plus, we're getting a great story that's been well presented as well at the same time.
I couldn't agree more.
I heard from some people talking online about why they didn't necessarily gravitate towards season one and season two of Picard, even though they were TNG fans. And a lot of that, from the people I've talked to, stemmed from the fact that a lot of the story wasn't sort of space-centric or space battle-centric or things happening on ships, you know. And so it was very much less Star Trek-y. And I really feel that way about season two. I enjoyed season two, but the best parts were when they were back in the present time, for me, in my opinion. But watching this season, and again, just talking about the first couple episodes, what I noticed is when they're doing scenes on ships and stuff like that, it is very much like a progression from what was happening with TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. It's a continuation of that, continuation of the films, more so than season one and season two. Season one and season two, there was a whole lot of the holographic controllers for everything, and they were just trying to... It didn't really connect with me in the same way that the tactileness of the designed L cars and panels and physical things did. And I'm really enjoying that in this season. And I don't know, all of the set designs, I know they brought the Okudas back and stuff, it's just, I appreciate it so much. It's great.
We have the Okudas, we have Doug Drexler, John Eves, Dave Blass brought them all back, and it really... I talked to Doug in person in LA at the Picard premiere, and just seeing his excitement in person on his face of the look that they've brought back to the franchise was just that it was contagious, his level of excitement.
Yeah. Even the Andorians that I've seen in the background of scenes and stuff have looked like when they were on the Raffi's, the Metellus Prime, in the background, you could see some. They looked closer to Enterprise Andorians than they did in Discovery. I'll say that.
Well, did you notice, too, that the Orions are no longer in that rubber mask? Oh. It's back to green face paint.
Thank God. Yeah.
As a professional Orion myself, I appreciate that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they're sort of riding the ship, so to speak, with this season, and I'm here for it.
Yes. And I wasn't even angry at the update to the Ferengi makeup. If you compare Sneed to that Ferengi we got in Discovery, so much better.
Yeah, the one in Discovery looked like he'd been out in the sun for too long.
Yeah.
He looked like Moogie.
And then stretched. Yes, Moogie. Very much like Moogie.
Oh, dear, Moogie.
It's interesting, though, you talk about the first two seasons. This new era of Star Trek it's had to find its feet. It's had to find out what Star Trek is in the 2020s. It is a different time, and I think, maybe they felt, by bringing Picard back, they had to do something that was going to be familiar to the existing fans, but not alienate newcomers too much. And I don't think they necessarily did a terrible job. I know that there's a lot of issues of seasons one and two, but I think at the same time, there was a balance that needed to be struck there. And they've kind of brought those new viewers in. Now you can be like, oh, now this is what Star Trek's really all about.
Yeah. I enjoyed season one and two. Same. I've done rewatches.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've got my complaints, but they're trivial.
Yeah. I prefer them over season... I am to break this. Amy's going to kill me. Season four of Discovery.
Oh, I liked season four of Discovery.
Definitely my least favorite.
Well, speaking of Discovery...
Yeah, you want to pivot a little bit? We've got some breaking news. Breaking news. Discovery is ending after season five.
It's a double-edged sword, kind of. It's... It ushered in our current era of Trek, and I'm hoping that it doesn't also signal another dark age.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Help me...
But at the same time, I think that we're at the end.
Yeah. And help me clarify something. So the post said it ends in 2024. So does that mean we will get... So season five will be on this year. Does that mean there'll be a season six and that will be the final season? Or is the season we're about to watch the last one?
The season we're about to watch is the last one.
And it isn't dropping this year.
Right, I think that they've pushed it into 2024.
Yeah. Right, okay. Fair enough.
I'm not dooming looming this at all. I mean, Picard's really making the fan base wild, everybody's going crazy for it. And everybody really loved Prodigy. Everybody was talking about Prodigy. Lower Decks, very popular. Strange New Worlds winning all kinds of awards, praise, acclaim. They've been renewed. This is not a dark age. Discovery, thank you for reinvigorating the franchise. Thank you for some really good story arcs and seasons. I love season two. It was spectacular, in my opinion. But yes, they are bowing out. Their end is near. But I think we have many, many years to come with great new Trek.
Well, I'm hoping. I was looking at the parallels this afternoon after the news broke of, season two of Discovery birthed Strange New Worlds unexpectedly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And with how season three of Picard is going so far and the community reaction over it, it almost feels like lightning striking twice, and that Titan is going to get the same treatment as, or should get the same treatment as, Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, and I was talking about this in another group chat with some fellow Aussie sci-fi friends of mine, and, Discovery was a polarizing entry in the franchise for a lot of Star Trek fans. I have personally always appreciated it and loved it because I'm of the firm belief that all Trek is good Trek. But I thank Discovery for what it did in helping Trek find its way into this era as well. Like, it's been a fun ride. It tried some new things. Some of them worked. Some of them didn't. But
Klingons.
But ultimately, like, it's been that testing ground in helping them find their feet. And I did. Read, funnily enough, about a week ago, there was some other stuff out there saying that, Paramount needed to sort of cut some costs in the streaming department. And my mind went straight to Discovery has been a big, expensive show. I would not surprise me if that's the first to go, because clearly the fans are gravitating more towards Prodigy, Lower Decks, and Strange New Worlds, and obviously Picard Season 3. So, mm-hmm. you know, why not just focus and spend the money on the shows that are going to bring more of it in, I guess.
True, and with the advent of the two animated series, mm. especially Prodigy,
mm.
the future of Legacy Trek, I really think, is in the animated series.
Because mm-hmm.
They can... The possibility to bring anybody back is endless at that point.
Yeah.
And the cost... You don't have the sets, you don't have the makeup, you don't have the wardrobe. All you have is the animation, writers, and the voice talent.
Yeah.
Which I don't know about you guys, but it, especially Prodigy, it once you get immersed into it, you're not really thinking that you're watching an animated series. It's you're watching Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Oh, yeah. The animation's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
One of the biggest surprises of last year, Prodigy. Absolutely.
Well, guys, our listeners may have tuned in because they are huge, ravenous fans of the animated series and are just chomping at the bit for us to start our animated series conversation. So, Davey, how about this week? How about you tell us what we're going to be talking about this week?
Well, so this week, I believe, we are looking back into the time travel topic, where we're going to be looking at the animated series Yesteryear, which probably actually one of my favorites of the animated series, Mark. That was why I jumped on the opportunity to be on this episode. I'm like, oh, the good episode!
Well, you guys might remember in this episode, Spock is transported by the Guardian of Forever to his childhood to save his younger self from dying during a Vulcan adolescence ritual and spawning a new timeline in which he is not the USS Enterprise first officer. No, it's an Andorian / Enar. They say Andorian, but he's clearly an Enar. Just saying.
Yeah. And if you're going to do the Guardian of Forever voice, Mark, you've got to do it in the style of the animated series, which is the Guardian of Forever in a retirement home. The travelers are returning.
You're not wrong. I was very put off by that. I was like, wait, that's not his voice.
Yeah, no, it, every time the Guardian spoke, it took me out of it momentarily. It's like I was immersed in it and I was like, oh, I'm out of it. It's not right.
It's the old Guardian. The Guardian of the Kittens. Well, speaking of the Guardian, what did you guys think about the setup for the time travel episode being the Guardian of Forever?
I thought it was pretty cool.
Mm.
Having only seen sporadic bits of the animated series, I wasn't prepared for the Guardian.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, wow, another Guardian injury. But at the same time, I was like, ugh, this isn't going to go right. But, you know, it's the Guardian. It's already set up for something bad is about to happen.
No. I don't know. I guess mayhem ensued in the original series. What was the original series episode where they went the Guardian Forever? City on the Edge of Forever. That's right.
The animated series was filled with classic callbacks to the original show. There's Tribbles. There's all that kind of Harry Mudd shows up at some point. It was a fun little way to tell extended stories, leveraging, plot points and what have you from the original show. So I can remember the first time watching it, because when I was a kid, they very randomly in the 90s started putting the animated series on Saturday mornings on one of the Australian TV networks. And this was one of the first ones I remember seeing.
Yeah.
The only thing I did, again, didn't like the voice. I also didn't like it. Just the animation of the whirly time portal. It was clearly just a kindergartner had gone nuts with some brown and orange paint.
Oh, Lord.
You say that. What I thought was looked ridiculous was Spock going through the portal.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. The movement and animation is, if you've ever seen the center seat, they do talk about the fact they basically did about 20 stock shots and just reused them over and over again.
Well, what I found fascinating about the Center Seat documentary was they said that the Filmation guys were like, oh, one of them, the main animators, was colorblind. So that's why the colors are all messed up. They were like, oh, you know, the Klingons are this color and the blah, 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 blah. But the guy couldn't see the right color or whatever, and so that's how it ended up all crazy.
There you go.
Anyway. Wow, how does one get a position as an animator and be colorblind?
But Filmation, I don't know. A couple of guys in the garage.
I mean, that's pretty impressive, though.
It explains a lot, too. But I loved that. I loved seeing the connective tissue there. I know we didn't really, in the 90s Trek, get a lot of... Well, I mean, Gene Roddenberry didn't want there to be a lot of callbacks to what was happening in the original series. He really didn't. That was kind of the mandate. But it's cool to see, because they're able to do that, if you watch Star Wars shows, do callbacks to, like, the original movies and stuff, and here's a side character here, here's this, here's that. And we really haven't experienced it until now, this, you know, latest iteration of Trek, where we're able to go back and, okay, here's this obscure alien that was in, you know, 5 seconds of this film, you know, in the 70s, or here's, you know, this character that appeared once in the original series. And I love it. I absolutely love it. I think it's great. And then I think just another thing Discovery did really well was bringing back Guardian of Forever in that unique and cool way.
Yeah.
I really love the callbacks to the older stuff. And I think that was a mistake on Roddenberry's part going into Next Gen. A newer viewer would see something like that and then pique their interest and potentially get them to go back further. You know, that goes all the way through today's Trek. Right? You know, it's a callback to something that happened in early Next Gen might pique a new viewer's interest to go back and explore that.
I mean, yeah. Q and Trelane are essentially the same character.
Yeah, I had read the thing about Trelane before, but I think there's a book that potentially deals with that. But anyway, slight side topic, but interesting. Yeah, callbacks in Trek, I think they are what make it now. I think you're right there, Mark. They didn't. Roddenberry didn't always kind of want that. I think he maybe envisioned more. It's like you'll always discover new things because the universe is infinite, and so therefore we're not going to go back. We're always going to go forward, which was a wonderful thing to have. But now there's so much of it out there that we love our connected universe. Like we love knowing that there is, you know, there's new things to explore, but there's also familiarity as well.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, obviously, we're talking about time travel this week, and this is something I think we discuss every time we discuss the time travel episode. But in particular this week, I want to bring it up, the question to both of you guys. If you could go back and change your past, like Spock did in this episode, is there a single moment or something that happened in your past that you were like, absolutely, I would fix this thing?
Such a good and very complicated question. And I've had to think about this long and hard because, do you know what? Do you ever have like those little moments where maybe you did something a little embarrassing or something you did or said, and it could have been like 5, 10, 20 years ago. It's just, and it always comes up in your mind, like in a moment where you're just sitting there and then all of a sudden you start thinking about this thing you did and you're like, oh God, that was so embarrassing, but it was 20 years ago. Why do I still care about it? But it's still somehow, I don't know. My life is peppered with little moments like that. But I would have to say that the answer to this question for me is probably actually a hard no. And that's probably because I like where I am in my life at the moment. And I think that so much of what I have done to date has put me in the position that I'm in. My life is not perfect. There's still things that I wish could be different or whatever, but there's a harmony there. And, you know, I'm doing my podcasting and I love it. I've got my beautiful partner. And what if I went back and changed something and it meant I didn't meet my partner, Anthony, or I didn't move to Melbourne, or I didn't decide to get my cute little dog, Pike? Like, if I changed it, who knows where I would be for better or worse, right? And I think that's the lesson that these time travel episodes sometimes try to teach us.
Yeah.
this may come as a shock, being that I'm such a huge Janeway fan, and how much that she loves to throw the temporal prime directive out the window. But I also have to say, hard no. Something I've thought about a lot, and little moments, big moments, bad decisions, good decisions, no matter what they were or their consequences, everything put me on a trajectory to where I am now. And so many good things have happened, and so many wonderful people such as yourselves have come into my life, and I'm with one single butterfly wing stepped on could unravel all of that.
Yeah.
And despite the bad in the past, I wouldn't change anything to jeopardize where I'm at now in my life and the good things that I have.
Yeah. When David was talking about certain like embarrassing moments or things like that, you know, little things like that, that would be the most tempting, right? Because I know if anything big, any of the bigger decisions that I've made, you know, good with good or bad consequences, would probably have ripple effects. And even if there's things that I'm still feeling the consequences of, you know, now, I still, like, I'm here, and I'm with, you know, again, the person that I want to be with, and I get my lovely dog, and it's the same as Davey, but only thing I can think of is, like, some conversations that ended up with some pie on my face that, again, it's strange, the things that haunt you. And I'm like, maybe if that one conversation was different, I don't know if it would have been the butterfly wing that would have... I might sneak back and just, like, delete one text message. You know? I might do that. I might go back through the Guardian of Forever and delete one text message and just see where we're at.
Yeah, that one impulsive moment. Yeah, if you ever done something like just in the, you know, your thinking brain's not working. It's more you're more feeling, and you maybe said something or did something that you know was the wrong thing, but you were just you needed to say it that way in that moment. Like, you needed to do it, and it probably didn't end well, but you still felt vindicated.
Oh, 100%. Oh, my God.
I feel we're speaking the same language, Mark.
Yeah. All I can say is I'd delete that text message. I'd come back through the portal, and all of a sudden I would have a pet giraffe. You know? That it would be something oddball like that. You know what I mean? It's just like, wait, what? No. Where's my dog?
Yeah. See, and that's, like, one of my biggest things, too, is, like, you know, what if saying that stupid thing resulted in me never having Balana and Miral in my life. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't trade those two little creatures for anything.
Yeah.
Pets named after Star Trek characters. We've all got them.
Yeah. And in fact, Miral is hurt because she's a, you know, she's a fancy boxer, so she's got her registered name, is actually Balana's Kuvamach Miral.
That's next level, but very cool.
Yes.
Thank you. I like to interconnect them from one generation to the next, and since her predecessor was Balana, it's like, oh, that's the only direction I could go.
Well, we have talked about Discovery a little bit, interestingly enough, this episode. I'm finding some Discovery connections with this episode of the animated series, and I didn't know if you guys picked up on that or not, but I instantly thought of the plot line of Michael Burnham sort of running away from Sarek and Amanda when she was a kid. Mm-hmm. And then Spock was, like, the only person that knew her whereabouts and whatnot. And, yeah, it just kind of felt like that. And then there's that creature thing that was kind of like a giant reptile of some kind that was chasing Michael. I don't know. It just reminded me of that. You guys? Am I the only one that caught that?
I think that the parallels between the Discovery storyline and this episode are definitely there with Spock going out on his own.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I didn't realize that everything on Vulcan, though, would kill you, like, you know, the desert. I guess you should, though, but it's a desert, but still is, like, this enlightened species, but all of their native animals will kill you.
It makes sense, though, on some level, because if you think about it, Vulcans were always very warlike and fierce until they harnessed their anger, right, and controlled it.
True.
And so, to me, it would make sense that you would have to... If you're growing up on a planet where it's fight or flight constantly, you'd either have to zen, find your center, or become like a fierce warrior creature. I don't know.
Well, so everything on Vulcan's trying to kill you. Is Vulcan actually Australia? Is that what we're finding
here? I was going to say it, but I thought it was you.
I mean, the dirt's red, right?
Well, in the center of the country, yes.
Is the center of the country where Ayers Rock is?
That is correct, but
what
it is in the center of the country. It's in the desert.
I was making that up.
No, but I'll have to check back. I don't actually think we refer to it as that anymore. I believe we refer to it as its Aboriginal name, which is Uluru.
You.
Yeah, I've never actually been there though. Although literally when the country was closed, all of a sudden everyone was taking a holiday to the Northern Territory to see the rock.
Do you know, we've done the same thing in the States here. When Obama was president, we renamed what was Mount McKinley after one of the presidents. We returned it to its native name, which is Denali.
I did not know that.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't that retcon Star Trek now, because, you know, McKinley Station is supposed to be in orbit of Mount McKinley?
It could still be named after the president, right?
Sure.
But if they changed it, I mean, I guess sometime after, you know, we must have changed it back.
Maybe there's some other famous McKinley that hasn't happened yet. They haven't been born.
Maybe.
Well, what is you guys' favorite time travel episode of Star Trek?
Ooh, there's so many to choose from, Mark. I mean, it's not an episode, but I obviously love The Voyage Home. But you know, if I were to pick two that really stand out for me, Past Tense from Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
All-time favorite. Absolutely love that episode. I loved the production value of it, the story behind it. And even though that time's kind of almost here.
The one with Sisko... going
Sanctuary District.
Sanctuary District. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And I have a secret guilty pleasure for the Voyager Season 3 two-parter Futures End Part 1 and 2, even though it is the campest, like, out there thing you've ever seen. It's so cheesy to go back and watch. I love it. It's such a guilty pleasure.
Is Sarah Silverman in that one?
That's the one.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that.
Yes.
That's great.
So I don't... Not for sure if you guys are aware, speaking of Future's End, and Neelix and Kes's obsession with watching the soap opera. Oh,
yes, okay. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, so I always thought it was a missed opportunity that they should have used a clip of All My Children when Robbie McNeil was on it in the 80s and have Kes and Neelix watching Robbie in All My Children in the briefing
room. Oh, that would have been hilarious.
I mean, it was a missed opportunity there.
Yeah. There's so many, like, funny little moments in it, which are just such a callback to the time it was made, like, where Sarah Silverman comes running out, and she's just like, "Why did you do to my computer? The hard drive is wiped!" And then there's so much about it that's, like, unrealistic as well, because do you know what? The car park at Griffith Observatory is never that empty, so... But yeah, a good. It's a fun little romp, as cheesy as it is.
Well, I would say my two favorites are Yesterday's Enterprise.
Oh, of course.
I love it. Mm. I've heard some people online hating on it lately, and I'm like, what? How do you not like Yesterday's Enterprise? Anyway, I think it's great. And then also, I'm going to pick a Voyager one. And I'm bad with episode titles, so sorry. But the Voyager episode where... Harry Kim has to save the day. He takes the flyer back and saves the ship that's under the ice.
Timeless.
Timeless. Yeah.
Yes. We are going to cover that's it on Voyager's... All the Things at some point, because I love that episode.
Call Me.
Yeah. For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. It's one of my favorites too, Jeremiah. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Voyager's 100th episode, directed by LeVar Burton.
Oh, I didn't realize that LeVar directed it. Oh, perfect.
Yep. The whole budget of special effects spent in one episode on that crash scene.
You know, I actually wasn't thinking about Timeless when I read that question earlier, Mark. But I'm going to go with my original answer.
Okay.
It's true, though, because my absolute favorite time travel episode, number one, is Voyager's Relativity, where... the 29th century Starship Relativity recruits 7 of 9 to go back and prevent Voyager's destruction. And we go through multiple past periods of Voyager's history.
Didn't we just watch that on All Good Things? Or did I just watch it on my own? I don't remember anymore. Everything's blending together. All the multiverses are collapsing into one.
And one of my favorite things about it was seeing pre-Voyager, when Voyager was still in dry dock.
Yes!
Getting to see the past of Voyager before the show ever started. I absolutely loved it.
We did cover it on All Good Things. Within the last couple of months. I know we have. Okay.
And my second favorite is DS9's... I will, I promise. Is DS9's Little Green Men. As I love a good Ferengi episode, and not only is it a Ferengi episode, but they're the Roswell aliens.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're so funny. Especially, they don't understand what they're saying, and they think, oh, one of that must be the mother.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Or Quark asked the nurse to give him an umok.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So inappropriate. Like,
you know, umoks is the most sexually explicit thing to ever happen on network television, and the censors never caught it.
I know. Oh, I mean,
it's great though.
Yeah, I won't say what he's essentially asking her to do, because this is All Good Things. But
we get a little salty here.
Well, I highly recommend everybody that loves the Ferengi go check out Armin Shimerman's Regis and Kathy Lee interview from the 90s.
Yes, I've seen that. Oh. It's so good. Yeah.
Regis gives Quark umoks on live national television.
Yeah, because he did it in full makeup, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's on YouTube. It's great.
Yeah, it is great.
Oh, my God. I got to check that out. That's hilarious. So, we're going to go back in time to the beginning of the episode. What's with the big bird alien historian? And do we think it's the same bird species as Lower Decks, or no?
Oh God, please no!
Birds can be historians too, Mark. It's okay. Like the birds can be just as much a contributors to society as everyone.
I know this is like a cartoon, like for kids, but like it really wasn't modified at all. It was just like Big Bird holding a pad. Like, they weren't even
trying.
He had
a rockin' bod, though. He had a rockin' bod. Go have a look at it. That's a, like, it was buys get the guys. He had arms for days.
Did you want to knock his feathers off? Oh, my God.
I was watching it. I'm
like, you want to take him behind the guardian to go plucking.
Scene. But I was God. Did they animate this bird with a really hot bod, or am I imagining things?
Oh my God. You just wanted to see his eggs.
He was a very thirsty bird.
It was a thirsty bird. I was like, all of a sudden I'm into history.
Oh my God.
You know, I can accept that he would be a relation to Big Bird far easier than being related to those birds from Lower Decks. I want that episode removed from canon.
Oh.
Like,
the birds weren't bad. Peanut Hamper was.
I want Peanut Hamper stricken from canon.
Aww.
I would rather have a season-long Tuvix arc than ever see Peanut Hamper again.
Oh, what was wrong with Tuvix? Tuvix was actually kind of cool. He was happening. I wasn't a Neelix fan, but I liked Tuvix.
Tuvix had to die.
I was like, oh no, they're killing him. They're going to bring Neelix back. Oh shoot. I was all disappointed.
I don't mind Peanut Hamper. I just like to go on the record. I'm okay with Peanut Hamper. I know that's an unpopular opinion, but it's all right. Peanut Hamper,
hey,
I get you. I get you.
This is Star Trek. Every opinion's right.
Absolutely.
I prefer the dog that turns into like a robot alien creature.
I love the dog.
That dog was scary, but I love the dog.
The dog, yeah.
So many wonderful things in which to urinate on.
They were targeting kids when they created this episode, and I thought it had a really good message at the end. Similar to like last week, you know, Janeway speaking directly to the audience. I think the audience got a really strong message out of this week's animated series episode. What did you guys think of the message?
Pick on the different kid was... I know.
We'll get into that in assimilation regeneration.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't really watch it through that lens. You know, what was the message here? Because there was some pretty harsh stuff. Like, you know, the way Sarek is like, you know, you can try this now, but if you fail, just know that people will call you a coward for the rest of your life. I'm like, whoa. All right. There's some, you know, gentle encouragement from your father. Like, great parenting there, Sarek.
I didn't even notice. It sounded like my dad.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was very toxic masculinity with how Sarek was portrayed in that episode.
Absolutely. Yeah. But Mark, I don't know if I picked up on a message for kids. So I don't know. What did you two think?
I thought, and I like you, I didn't watch it through that lens, but after reviewing these topics, I stopped and thought about it for a second. And I think what I took away from it as the message was your actions have consequences, no matter how little or big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and something you think is going to be, like we were talking about earlier, with going back and changing it back for ourselves, it's like something small, even like deleting a text message, might have repercussions that would affect, you know, you come back and there's a giraffe in your living room. You know, it's that maybe not dwelling on the past. Maybe that's something it's teaching kids that you can't go back to the past. So just move forward and accept the decisions that you've made, you know. I mean, so I think that's one lesson you can get out of it. Mm. But also a bigger message that I know that they purposely wanted kids to get out of this was about the decision that young Spock made as far as his pet Sulet was concerned, either to prolong his life, but he'd suffer, or to end his life so that he wouldn't suffer anymore. And this is something that kids really don't have to think about. And I think that, you know, the writers of Trek, DC Fontana, gets credit for having big balls, even though she doesn't have balls, and big balls for pitching this for a kid's show, because that's an important topic. And kids deal with this too, you know, with parents that might be dying, grandparents, their pets. So it is something you need to think about. And so this is, I think, a mature way to sort of show kids about these type of decisions and get them to think about it anyway.
Yeah, the Spock's choice. I was not prepared for this episode to have me bawling by the end in bed last night with Miral snuggled up next to me. And I'm watching that and, like, clutching onto her, like, sobbing at the end.
Yeah things like that always... It reminds, whenever I go to my vet where I take Pike, there's a little candle that sits on the reception desk. And if that candle is lit, it means someone is saying goodbye to their pet. And they ask that you be quiet and respectful and all that kind of stuff. And I always... You know,
we have the same thing at mine.
Yeah. And Pike's not even two yet, right? And already I can't imagine my life without him. And I know that it'll be a, you know, one day, years and years and years from now, I may be faced with that choice. I might hope that, you know, he may just kind of, you know, go naturally without having to go through any pain or anything. But I've seen friends and family who've held on to pets for a very long time. And you've seen that pet and you've gone, this pet is not living a very good life.
Yeah.
And I think of how much he gives me and how much pets give us. And I think that, you know, the best thing that I could do is not be selfish in that moment when that decision comes and do something that, you know, don't let him continue to live. Because sometimes I can live for years in this, you know, state of, you know, they go blind, they go deaf, they've got arthritis, they've got diabetes, they've got all this kind of stuff that they get.
They wear a diaper.
I've got a friend right now who's... Dog has to walk around in a diaper. Poor thing, he's 15 years old. Yeah. But yeah, but then, you know, that's easy for me to say now. Who knows how I'll feel when Pike is 15 years old and he's been my companion for so long, right? It's a really, really tough choice to make. And, you know, we can talk about it so easily as a pet, but, you know, the question here, you've also talked about a loved one, right? And there's a very, very complex and nuanced topic right there.
I lost B'Elanna out of the blue at 13 years old, went in for a routine tooth extraction, and they called me and said, we can't do it. This is what's going on. And it blindsided me. And I had the choice of giving her the final act of love or being selfish and keeping her one more day because that's all she had left in her.
Yeah.
And as devastating as it was, I released her.
Yeah.
And it nearly killed me as well.
Yeah. Well, assimilations or regenerations?
Yes, let's move on to something more happy. Let's assimilate something.
Let's hard pivot. nice segue. So, assimilation, for me, the first thing that came into mind was Thalen, the Andorian / Enar. I love that in a universe without Spock, there is an Andorian on the bridge, and I love Andorians anyway, and I thought it was cool.
Regenerate the fact that he's gray.
No, that means he's an Enar.
He refers to himself as an Andorian, doesn't he?
Maybe he's an Enar Andorian hybrid, and that's why he's not blue or white.
Thank you.
He's gray.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. We'll see.
Don't wreck my head, canon, Davey.
Or are Andorians just thought out Enars, and that's why they're blue and the Enars are white and he is gray because he's halfway thought out?
There were some fun little bits and pieces in this episode that I thought were a total assimilation. Okay, there's, for an animated Saturday morning cartoon, a very insightful and deep look into Spock's childhood and the complicated relationship that we know that he has with his father.
Mm.
And something else I really loved as well was, and you don't always get this in science fiction shows where you've got this massive universe. It feels like everyone is just set to the whatever the American time zone might be, but there's references to the different calendar on Vulcan and how they measure time and years and months and all that kind of stuff in a totally different way. I thought that was really, really cool, and probably I think this, I mean, apart from like a mock time, this was also the first time we got a really solid look at Vulcan. That was the beauty of doing this in animation. We saw like a futuristic Vulcan city in the middle of the desert and weird little cars that just kept going past, like little Jetsons cars that were just like,
I loved the cars so much.
It's like someone just like, they're like, do you know what this needs? This needs some flying cars. Derek, put a flying car in there, would you please? Thank you.
It's the future.
Those cute little details, totally, total assimilation for me. There was some great little attention to detail in this episode.
I absolutely adored that Majel Barrett was doing the voice of Amanda.
That's right, yeah.
Having her involved in any shape, weight, or form in a Star Trek series is always a bonus with me.
Yeah,
yeah. They even animated her to kind of look like Majel Barrett, I thought.
A little bit, yeah. Which is the beauty of Majel, because all they did to change her between the pilot and the series was just put her in a different colored wig. So
it's true.
Just change Majel's hair and she becomes a new character.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody else notice when little Spock was first sort of running off to do his thing and his bear was following him? He turned around and like told him to stay, and he gave him the Guinan crazy fingers. Did you guys notice that? He's like, ah!
Oh, like
I didn't notice that.
Oh, like she does with Q.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally. Oh my god, I love that when he did the crazy fingers. I was like, oh, Guinan.
The crazy fingers.
Oh my goodness, I love it. She did it in Picard too. Do you remember
she
that?
Did. She did. I do remember.
Are they crazy fingers or are they cute
fingers?
It's
some kind of defense, right? It's some sort of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, my powers, they'll come out of my fingertips. Oh.
Yeah.
I love that. They also gave some Andorian backstory here, which I'm not sure they touched on in the original series. I guess they did a little bit, but we're saying that the Andorians were a warrior race with a strong sense of family, and that was carried over from... that was carried on... onto Enterprise, where that was one of the first things they brought up when they were talking about the Andorians on Enterprise, is you learn that family is extremely important to them, as well as, like, being like kind of a warrior culture.
Yeah, again, that's one of those little details, right? There was probably deeper than other parts of the original series ever went. So, yeah, I remember picking up on that as well. And it was funny how much I did pick up on, because I'll be honest, when I volunteered to be on this episode, I actually watched this episode on my phone on my train ride home from work yesterday. It meant I was focused, because normally if I'm sitting watching, I get distracted and I look at my phone. Yeah. But because I watched it on my phone on the train, I felt like I took more in and noticed a lot more.
Oh, neat.
So, I'm not saying that bullying is good in any way, but I liked that this had connections to the reboot films with the Vulcan children bullying Spock. And even though I've watched these backwards and had seen the reboot films prior to seeing this episode, it was like, oh, I see that connection now between the two.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, you're right.
What about that voice acting on those child Vulcans? That emotional Earther, your father brought shame to Vulcan.
Okay. Yeah, it was very 70s cartoon voice acting.
That's a perfect segue into Regenerations.
Did you read my Regenerations, Mark?
Our listeners might remember Regenerations are the things that we do not like. So, yeah, that's perfect.
And look, straight up, it's that child voice acting.
Yep.
Oh, Father, I'm off to show my friends the Vulcan neck picture I know how to do now.
I don't think
he
would
say. You have the Grey Andorian on there as a regeneration. What is wrong with you?
What is wrong with him? Is the real question. Does he need some sun? Does he need to go and roll around in the ice? I don't know. Like, where's your pigment?
Where's your pigment?
Oh, I actually have to piggyback on the Spock, the Vulcan children voice, and the Vulcan healer, I felt was the same camp there with the way he spoke.
Oh, yeah. The healer was... Yeah. I was like... It took me out of the episode. I was like, what is this guy doing here? Who is this?
Yeah. No, yeah.
Who's this technicolored wizard?
I have one that... Actually, the more I think about it, the more I wish I'd made it an assimilation. And that is when Spock says the particular clothes that he's going to need, and Kirk opens his communicator and he's like, I'll just notify the costume department.
Yes.
Okay.
Don't you mean the replicator? But okay.
Yeah. It's got some seamstress in there. It's like, shit, we need something from the 21st century. Let's get it.
Hold on.
Now I'm picturing a Cardassian in chains in the bowels of the Enterprise being forced to sew clothing at a moment's notice.
Poor Garrick.
Oh, well, I mean, look, they've probably got fancy dress parties on board the Enterprise, so therefore when they need it, like, all right, oh God, I really, really need a Tellarite suit. I'll go for costume department, hello. But yeah, I put that as a regenerate, but then I'm like, actually, no, that's cool. I like that the Enterprise has a costume department. That's better than Cetacean Ops.
True. Well, regeneration. Spock has a tendency to tell practical jokes. No. They even say it at the end of the episode, Vulcans don't tell jokes. That's literally like one of the last lines of the episode. So, what? Did you guys catch that?
I did catch that. And that's even restated into Voyager even as, you know, Vulcans don't tell jokes. Mm. I kind of just wrote that off with a grain of salt and thinking, okay, well, maybe that was pre-Kulinar Spock as a child, his human side was more dominant.
It was just one time, and I never did it again.
Exactly.
Yeah, all Vulcans go through a phase. It's a practical joke phase.
Pull my finger.
They just don't talk about it.
Yeah. There's some interesting references to, well, some interesting Vulcan behavior in general in this, and it's a slight regeneration that I didn't originally think of, and that is the fact that, and maybe this is because Vulcans don't tell lies and they take everything on face value, but he's just like, you know, he's watching his kid from behind like, you know, a wall, and he's just like, oh, I'm a distant cousin, I'm daughter of this person, oh, come over for dinner. Hang out with us.
Well, headcanon, if he's Vulcan, and Vulcans don't lie...
I know, yeah, I know, but it's
he'd just... have to be like, oh, he must be my cousin.
Yeah,
but wait, if Vulcans don't lie, Spock's lying.
I know, exactly.
Oh, my headcanon's broken already, as soon as it came out of my mouth.
Not a lie, an omission.
An omission. No, okay. It's a lie.
Because he's not totally lying, because he is related. He is part of the family. He's just decided, I'm a cousin, not your son.
Yeah, but and he just shows up out of
nowhere. I'm just splitting hairs.
I know, but like he shows up out of nowhere and he's just like, oh yeah, I'm just this cousin, oh. Rara. And then at the end he's like, oh, you're welcome here anytime. He's like, oh, no, I'm not coming back. Ooh, gross.
I don't know about you guys. How rude.
He's like, Spock. We hope to see you again. Oh, no, don't think so.
I will be back to this dreadful place.
Yeah, your wife's cooking was awful.
If I had some rando person show up at my doorstep saying that they were a family member, I would be hitting the emergency button on my phone in my pocket to automatically dial the cops.
You're like, oh, son of Dobrynga, are you? Emergency SOS call.
Did you guys see White Lotus?
Yes.
Season 2?
No, I haven't.
Yes. Do you remember they showed up at the doorstep with those long-lost relatives and they almost like shot him with a shotgun?
Yes. So funny. So good.
I'm like, hey, we're your cousins. Get out of here. All right. We should, before we run out of time, we should jump into some of our trivia for this week's episode. So let's go hog wild. Whoever, feel free to shout out whatever trivia interests you.
I'll go. The writer of yesteryear, Dorothy D.C. Fontana, was a writer and story consultant for Star Trek The Original Series, and also served as the story editor and associate producer of Star Trek The Animated Series. She said, "When I came to the animated show, I wanted to do at least one script. This episode is the only one she wrote for the animated Star Trek."
That's insane. I read that and I was like, what? Because she...
Especially when you...
Yeah. She's written so
she's
much.
Powerhouse.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. She was heavily kind of involved in sort of like the script supervision and all that in general of the animated series, wasn't she? No, and this is the one she kind of like mainly penned, but I thought she had a much broader involvement in the creative direction behind the show.
She did, but this is the only one she scribed.
Yeah. And it's such a DC Fontana episode. It's beautiful. I think the next one that we have here is that prior to the writing of this animated episode, with its portrayal of a boyhood Spock, a young version of him had been temporarily considered for inclusion as a regular character in Star Trek's animated series, along with other child equivalents of the series' main characters. God, that would have been awful. I'm sorry.
Yes!
A whole series of you know, the episode Rascals.
I know. And they just would have had the same person doing the child voices for all of them. So they all would have...
For all of them.
Did you just throw Rascals under the bus?
No. I did it broad spectrum.
Because I love Rascals.
I do too, but I'm saying if it was not contained to a single episode and throughout an entire series.
True.
I need to see him now. Now.
He's my number one dad.
He's my number one dad.
So good.
The storyline involving the Salot. The storyline involving the Salot was not included in the episode's pitch. Dorothy Fontana noted, "I came up with that angle in the outline. The concept of Spock having a pet, Salot, in his youth had already been established, however, the creature having been spoken about, though without Spock's particular Salot having been named," and that was in Journey to Babel. Fontana observed, "You could now finally get to see the Salot," I keep having to say it, "which could only be referred to in Journey to Babel."
What is it? Oh, it's Enterprise, where they talk. T'Pol talks about her pet Salot, and we never saw it there either.
Oh, okay.
But I did love the line of "a Vulcan child is never late with its Salot's dinner."
Oh, was that in this episode?
No, that was in Enterprise.
Oh, okay.
The euthanizing of Aichaya embodied a theme that Dorothy Fontana was eager to teach youngsters about. I actually wanted to do a story that dealt with death, she admitted. It just seemed to me that so many children are not aware of death, and then when a pet dies, the children is devastated by it. The parents find it difficult to explain the situation, and I wanted to touch on a way to deal with the subject. Fontana additionally remembered, I felt strongly about dealing with the death of a pet. It was a very serious thing for kids. We were trying to put across a lesson to children that when it comes time for an animal to die, if he must go, it should be with dignity. Wow.
Yeah. Good message.
Very heavy. And I think that kind of feeds into the next one, which was, yeah, there was some fear from NBC executives that children would be upset by the depiction of euthanasia with Aichaya and wanted the ending to the episode changed. But Fontana refused this, and Gene Roddenberry supported that decision, which is... Yeah, if we talk about messages for children, like there's something that is very, very solid to have kept in here. It's upsetting, but it's real. And really good choice.
The dialogue from this episode that was spoken by Star Trek, the animated series regular cast, was recorded when all of the cast members were together. The first time they had reunited since the filming of TOS ended in 1969. So I guess they had all individually come in and recorded tracks, but for this particular episode, they all got back together. So that's cool.
That is very cool, which segues us into our final piece of trivia, which I just loved about this episode, and that was the addition of Mark Leonard, who played Sarek, becoming one of only three actors besides the regulars to play the same character on both the series. This series and TOS. The other two were Roger C. Carmel's Harcourt Mudd and Stanley Adams's Cyrano Jones.
Hey, Davey, you said it at the start, this is one of the best animated series episodes. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, don't tell me that. I haven't finished them all.
I don't hear a lot of people talking about the animated series very often. And I think I mentioned to you, Jeremiah, last week, like I put it on before bed often. I didn't grow up with it. I didn't watch it through college. I didn't watch it through my 20s or even much of my 30s. I think I started getting into a little bit of my 30s, but, I'm 40 now. And I'm just now really starting to kind of appreciate it in a quirky, weird way. I'm like, I like this Trek. You know, it's fun. It's a fun Trek to put on.
It's actually my buddy Matthew Dempsey's favorite series of all of Star Trek. Yes.
Oh, we got to have him on next time.
I think he would enjoy that.
Yeah. Did you say
what I love?
So I was just gonna say, so this is Matthew Dempsey's animated series is his favorite. That checks out. No shade, Matthew. I know that Pulaski's your favorite and all that kind of stuff. Is like if it's more niche, he loves it.
Oh, yep. What I think is fun about the animated series. And I don't know if either of you have seen it. It's on YouTube. A guy has been animating, like, Next Gen and Voyager in the style of animated series.
Yes, it's so good.
Yes.
Love
and
it.
And I've probably watched the animated version of Threshold 100 times at this point.
Yeah, and there's a Best of Both Worlds one for TNG, right? And Riker does the TAS run.
Yep.
Love it.
Well, you guys want to jump into final thoughts on today's episode?
This was a fun one. I'm kind of glad I got to come on All Good Things and cover an animated series episode. And perfect choice because, you know, it's... I say this is, you know, probably the best episode of the animated series, but there's some great little gems in there. You know, you do have to kind of put yourself in a right frame of mind to watch it, especially as an adult. But you know, I can see this is an audio podcast, and Mark is currently making a visual gag, one that's very inappropriate for the non-explicit rating of this show. But you know, I enjoyed the opportunity to revisit this. And to see the wonderful little details that they were able to that they were trying to do in an animated version that they couldn't do in live action at the time. So yeah, what about you, Jeremiah?
I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was a lot of fun, and I thought it really added to the larger tapestry of Star Trek time travel canon in a good way. I enjoyed the fact that I got to go deeper into the waters of the animated series, mm-hmm. and it makes me want to go further and actually get them all watched.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you guys had a good time. I get worried when I pull out animated series episodes or original series episodes, because I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but all Trek is good Trek, and that's how I feel. I love everything. I love Discovery. I love the original series. I love the animated series. It's all cool to me. I love watching it, and this is I'm lucky to be on this particular show, so I can hop around and check it all out. So thank you guys very much for coming on with me, and for, you know, you guys genuinely enjoyed it, and so that makes me feel really good. So awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
absolutely. Likewise.
Jeremiah, what are we going to talk about next week?
Next week is Kobe Ashimaru Part 2, TNG's Thine Own Self.
Now, do either of you guys remember Thine Own Self?
No.
Googling it.
I thought Davey was just going to shout out, oh yeah, it's the blah, 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 blah.
Yes, the Data radioactivity primitive planet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Doesn't that lady wear the same... She wears a very similar dress to Janeway's Fairhaven dress, doesn't she? The schoolmarm?
Oh, yeah. The lady that thinks that fire just exists in wood, and that's why wood burns. Yes. It's all coming back to you now. But that's for next week, listeners.
The reason it's on the Kobayashi Maru episode is because this is the episode where you have Deanna Troi, and she is faced with her own Kobayashi Maru, whether or not let Geordi die or not. And they don't call it the Kobayashi Maru. They don't name drop it. They should have, because that's totally the test she's taking. So that's why it's part two of her Kobayashi Maru series.
You're focusing.
You know, that without going into that episode ahead of time, that should have been the A plot point of that story, right?
Yeah, I was just about to say, you're focusing a whole episode on a B plot, Mark. You little minx.
Well, there's not a lot of, honestly, within Trek, not a lot of, like, Kobayashi Maru episodes. So I started the series, and I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to go to all the series. And I was like, oh, there's not really. Mm. I mean, it's mentioned here and there, but, like, to have an actual plot of part of an episode be this type of test, there's not really a lot. So this is the next one. Well, we would love to hear what you thought of today's episode and hope you'll join our Facebook group, the BQN Collective, to continue our discussion there. You can also tweet your thoughts at AllGoodPod. Please follow the network on Twitter and Instagram at BQN Podcasts. We've also partnered with our friends at the Fandom Podcast Network. You can find us by searching their master feed. So, Jeremiah, where can people find you when you are not jumping through the Guardian of Forever to save your younger self?
Mark, you guys can find me over on Twitter at Captain Jeremiah, or TikTok at Captain Jeremiah Brown. And Davey, where can our fans find you when you are not recreating Vulcan down in Australia?
Well, you can find my show, The Trekspert's Quiz, in the BQN Master Feed, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and on YouTube. And also keep an eye out for a new project of mine about video gaming coming very, very soon. And Mark, where can people find you when you're not ruffling the feathers of a sexy avian historian?
Hey, I love huevos rancheros, what can I say? Well, when I'm not doing that, people can find me on the BQN Collective Facebook page. They can also find me on Twitter at MarkWhite207. And if they become a patron of the network on Patreon, they can listen to my show, It's Green and It's Kinda Fabulous.
Please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show. You can also follow the entire network's podcast with our master feed by searching BQN. This way you won't miss any of our fine shows like Union Federation, Galaxy Class, History with the Zalagis, Infinite Diversity, Mickey's Marvels, Sasquatch, What's the Tea, Bev, and the fabulous Trekspert's Quiz.
At this time, we would like to thank our associate producers, Mahindran Radhakrishnan and Tim Cooper. A special thanks to Graham Kelly for our opening and closing music, and Mark White for our artwork each and every week.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. We will add you to the Hive Mind Facebook group so you can enjoy It's Green, Amy's Math Moments, and other network perks. With a monthly subscription of $5 or more, you can join our meetings of the Hive Mind Roundtable discussion on the second Saturday of each month. Visit patreon.com/bqn to get all the details and watch your messages.
Thank you for listening.
We hope you'll enjoy us as we search out
all good things.
So, Jeremiah.
I was like, what is happening?
I was like, am I failing or am I waiting for a cue?
I'm like, it hasn't frozen, no, it's moving.
You can see me moving? Oh, damn it.
Yeah, very slightly.
Oh, I was trying not to move at all. Okay.